you for having me. I'm always here. Thank you for allowing me to speak this morning. I've only spoken to you, as Ness said, once on Zoom. So this is the first time face-to-face. So thank you for listening, and thank you for your grace that you're about to extend me. Today we are talking about grace and walking in grace, and we're doing a series on enjoying being overflow, so things that are important to our house family. Let's jump in. So some of the things we've talked about thus far are being transforming and being kingdom focused, doing graceful, and then we're going on from there. I want to just quickly touch on, in terms of grace, there's this lovely quote by Chris Vallotton that says, "Everyone needs mercy and grace to recover from failure. Mercy means you don't get what you deserve, and grace means you get what you don't deserve." So I just wanted to make that distinction from the start, just because there are so many facets of grace that we could talk about. But the facet that I feel like I'm meant to be talking about to do with grace this morning is actually the grace that's empowering and the grace that's transforming and the grace that's victorious. So I have two missions today. One is that you get to know yourself better, and two is that you get to know Jesus better. And through that you get to love yourself better and that you get to love Jesus better. Better, not the right word, more, deeper. Thank you. Just to contrast the difference, there's this passage in Matthew, I think it's Matthew 18, where Peter says to Jesus, "How many times should I forgive my brother?" And then Jesus tells this parable of how the master servant owes back his master a massive debt, and then the master forgives and gives mercy to the servant. And then the servant goes away from there, and he has a slave who owes him a debt, and he says that he won't forgive him. And then obviously that's not the point of the story. The point of the story being that is mercy and that is forgiveness, and that is so valid to do with the topic of grace, but not what I want to cover today. But if you're interested in exploring that a bit more, Matthew 18. All right. This is the definition of grace. Thanks, Aaron. Which in Hebrew is chen. Let's all say that together. Chen. How much water have you consumed this morning? So in Hebrew, ken is anything that induces a favourable response, or something that we find ourselves drawn to. It's to find a treasure, and it brings us delight. Another way it's used in the Bible is when someone asks to be treated like a treasure, that is to be treated favourably. So this is what it means to be found as ken in someone's eyes. Ken. And it's specifically to do with when someone of higher status shows favour to someone of lower status. So that's the aspect of grace that I want to talk about today, is something that brings delight. And this is the story of the gospel. This is the story of Jesus and how we constantly fail him, but how he constantly seeks to have relationship with us and finds delight in having that relationship with us. So key things that I want to talk about today is how grace is completely dependent on our identity, first and foremost, and then how grace grows through trial, and then how grace overflows victory. That's kind of where we're going today, which we think will come up to next. But to start off that discussion of identity, I want us to turn to the people around us, just one or two others. As many as you would like around you. There's no rules to this. Just make sure you're with someone, because the person that you're with is going to have something valuable to share, and you are going to have something valuable to share. So we're just going to have a quick chat about what makes you you. So if you were to describe yourself, how would you describe yourself to someone who has never met you? And have you ever felt or walked in God's grace? What did it feel like? When did it happen? So this is just something that we do because I don't have all the answers. You don't have all the answers. But together, including with Jesus, we have all the answers. So I would love to hear the wisdom that you bring, as much as I really appreciate you hearing the wisdom that hopefully I'll bring this morning. So that's why we do this. We have these discussions so we get to hear each other's wisdom. All right, so turn to the people around you. What makes you you? How you would describe yourself? And have you ever felt or walked in God's grace, and what was that like? Thank you. Did we get to know something about someone that we didn't know? Maybe. Did we discover things that we didn't know about ourselves? I always find it interesting what comes out of my mouth when people just give me space to speak and they just listen. It's a good thing to practice. So we're going to be looking at Daniel today. We're going to do a bit of an overview of Daniel, but we want to concentrate on chapter 6. But before we dive into Daniel, we might have a look at the Bible Project Daniel video, which gives us an overview of all the 12 chapters of Daniel? 12 chapters of Daniel. So we're going to concentrate on chapter 6 today, and we will read through that, but I would like to give us a bit of a big picture of Daniel, because it's very easy to think of Daniel just as chapter 6 with the lion's den. Whether you're familiar with that story, that's the story that we're going to go over, but let's have a look at the overview first.
The book of Daniel, the story is set right after Babylon's first attack on Jerusalem, and they had plundered the city and its temple and taken a wave of Israelites into exile. Among them were four men from the royal family of David: Daniel, who's later named Belteshazzar, and his three friends, who you probably know by their Babylonian names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. This book tells of their struggles to maintain hope in the land of their conquerors. The book's design seems pretty simple at first. Chapters 1 through 6 contain stories about Daniel and his friends in Babylon, while chapters 7 through 12 contain the visions of Daniel about the future. But this two-part shape is made even more interesting by another design feature, and that's the book's language. It begins in Hebrew, the language of the Israelites, but chapters 2 through 7 are written in Aramaic, a cousin language to Hebrew spoken widely among the ancient empires. But then in chapters 8 through 12, it goes back to Hebrew. This design shows how chapters 2 through 7 are a coherent section, but it also highlights the importance of chapters 2 and 7 for understanding the later chapters of the book. Let's just dive in. Chapter 1 introduces the basic tension of the first half of the book. Daniel and his friends, they're really wise and capable, and they're recruited to serve in the royal palace of Babylon. But they're pressured to give up their Jewish identity by living and eating like Babylonians and violating the Jewish food laws found in the Torah. So they refuse, and they choose faithfulness to the Torah, and it puts them in danger. But God delivers them, and they end up being elevated by the king of Babylon. After this begins the Aramaic section, which you'll see has this really cool symmetrical design. So first, the king of Babylon has a dream that, it turns out, only Daniel is able to interpret. It's about a huge statue made of four types of metal, and it symbolizes a sequence of kingdoms, and the head is Babylon. But then a huge rock comes flying in, and it shatters the statue, and it becomes this huge mountain. Now, this dream is the first of many symbolic visions in the book, and this one introduces the basic storyline of them all. Daniel says that the statue represents a train of human kingdoms following from Babylon, and they will all fill God's world with violence. But one day, God's kingdom will come and will confront and humble the arrogant kingdoms of this world and fill the world with the healing justice of God's reign and rule. After this, chapter 3 tells the famous story of Daniel's three friends who refuse to bow down and worship a huge idol statue, which, like the statue in chapter 2, represents the king and his imperial power. And so the friends are persecuted. They're thrown into a fiery furnace, but God delivers them from death, and they're exalted by the king, who now acknowledges their God as the true one. After this come a pair of stories about two Babylonian kings, the father, Nebuchadnezzar, and then his son, Belshazzar. They're both filled with pride because of their imperial power. And so, like in chapter 2, God warns them both through dreams and then visions, which, also like chapter 2, only Daniel can interpret. He says that both kings are to humble themselves before God, and both kings arrogantly resist. So Nebuchadnezzar is stricken with madness. He becomes like a beast in the field. But then he humbles himself before God, and his humanity returns to him. He's restored as king. This is in contrast with his son, Belshazzar, who doesn't humble himself before God, and he's assassinated that very night. Now, these two stories draw this imagery from Genesis chapters 1 and 2 and Psalm 8, where humans are depicted as the royal image of God. He's given them authority to rule over the beasts of the field and the birds of the air on behalf of God, who is the world's true king. But when human kingdoms forget that, when they rebel and make themselves and their power into a god, they become less than human, like violent beasts who will face God's justice. Which brings us to chapter 6, the pair of chapter 3. And this time it's Daniel who's being persecuted because he refuses to pray and worship the king as a god. And so like the friends, he's sentenced to death and he's thrown into a lion's den. But God delivers him from the beasts. And like the friends, the king exalts Daniel and praises his God, which brings us to chapter 7. It's the pair of chapter 2 and the center of the book where all its themes come together. It's another dream, but it's Daniel's this time. And ironically, he can't understand the dream until an angelic messenger explains it to him. He sees a series of four beasts, one like a lion, then like a bear, then one like a winged leopard, each of these symbolizing an arrogant kingdom. And last of all is a super beast, identified as a really evil empire, and it has lots of horns, a common symbol for kings in the Old Testament. And there's one specific horn who is an image of an arrogant king who exalts himself above God and persecutes God's people. Now, they are symbolized by a figure called the Son of Man, who's an image for both God's covenant people, but also for their king from the line of David. But then all of a sudden, God, who's called the Ancient of Days, comes and he sets up his throne. He destroys the super beast and he exalts the Son of Man on the clouds, where he comes up to sit at God's right hand and share in God's rule over the nations. We can look back now and see how all of these stories in the first half fit together. The three stories of faithfulness despite persecution, these are meant to offer hope to God's suffering people among the nations. But they suffer because human kingdoms have rebelled against God and have become beasts. And so these visions encourage patience, that God's people are to wait for him to bring his kingdom and rule over our world and vindicate his suffering people.
So there's a couple more minutes left in that video, which is really good, which just goes on to describe more about Daniel's dreams. But I really just want to focus on those first few books and the story of Daniel's life itself. So I'm going to read through chapter 6. It's about 25 verses long, and I do want to read all of it. When I was thinking about what can I cut out here, can't, too good, going to read all of it. So because it may be a familiar story to you, I just want to encourage you to close your eyes and just ask God what he's going to highlight for you today. Because there's always something new to learn and there's always new revelation that he wants to bring. So Daniel 6. Darius the Mede decided to divide a kingdom into 120 provinces, and he appointed a high officer to rule over each province. The king also chose Daniel and two others as administrators to supervise the high officers and protect the king's interests. Daniel soon proved himself more capable than all the other administration and high officers. Because of Daniel's great ability, the king made plans to place him over the entire empire. Remember, this is Daniel the slave. Daniel who, has come from a slave position and chosen because of his wisdom. Although he has served several kings before this. Then the other administrators and high officers began searching for some fault in the way Daniel was handling government affairs, but they couldn't find anything to criticize or condemn. He was faithful, always responsible, and completely trustworthy. So they concluded, our only chance of finding grounds for accusing Daniel will be in connection with the rules of his religion. So the administrators and high officers went to the king and said, "Long live King Darius. We are all in agreement. We administrators, officials, high officers, advisors and governors, that the king should make it a law that will be strictly enforced. Give orders that for the next 30 days, any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except to you, your majesty, will be thrown into the den of lions. And now, your majesty, issue and sign this law so that it cannot be changed, an official law of the Medes and Persians that cannot be revoked." So King Darius signed the law. But when Daniel learned that the law had been signed, he went home and knelt down, as usual, in his upstairs room, with its windows open towards Jerusalem. He prayed three times a day, just as he had always done, giving thanks to his God. Then the officials went together to Daniel's house and found him praying and asking for God's help. So they went straight to the king and reminded him about his law. "Did you not sign a law that for the next 30 days, any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except to you, your majesty, will be thrown into the den of lions?" "Yes," the king replied. "That decision stands. It is an official law of the Medes and Persians that cannot be revoked." Then they told the king, "That man Daniel, son of the captives from Judah, is ignoring you and your law. He still prays to his God three times a day." Can't you just hear it in the office, someone gossiping about someone else? Hearing this, the king was not in the church office. Sorry. Hearing this, the king was deeply troubled and he tried to think of a way to save Daniel. He spent the rest of the day looking for a way to get Daniel out of this predicament. In the evening, the men went together to the king and said, "Your majesty, you know that according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, no law that the king signs can be changed." So at last, the king gave orders for Daniel to be arrested and thrown into the den of lions. The king said to him, "May your God, whom you serve so faithfully, rescue you." A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den. The king sealed the stone with his own royal seal and the seals of his nobles so that no one could rescue Daniel. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night fasting. He refused his usual entertainment and couldn't sleep at all that night. Very early in the next morning, the king got up, hurried out to the lion's den. When he got there, he called out in anguish, "Daniel, servant of the living God, was your God, whom you serve so faithfully, able to rescue you from the lions?" Daniel answered, "Long live the king. My God sent his angel to shut the lions' mouths, so that they would not hurt me, for I have been found innocent in his sight, and I have not wronged you, your majesty." The king was overjoyed and ordered that Daniel be lifted from the den. Not a scratch was found on him, for he had trusted in his God. Then the king gave orders to arrest the men who had maliciously accused Daniel. He had them thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and children. The lions leaped on them and tore them apart before they even hit the floor of the den. So good. You may notice that there's not the mention of the word grace in that story. But to me, the life and the story of Daniel encapsulates the favour that God has found with him. And there's a couple of things that stand out that I just want to draw attention to today. The first is that walking in grace begins in identity. Daniel is one of God's sons from the people of Judah. And he was originally chosen and raised up, essentially from the position of being a prisoner. His kingdom was overthrown, and the king had his officials select some pretty men who might know what they're doing and will train them up for 3 years as leaders. Daniel was one of these people. From the very beginning, he had favour with God and he was set apart to lead. Daniel was trustworthy, he was faithful, and he was wise. So I personally think that there's two things that we need to know about identity. One of them is God's place in our identity, and one of them is our place in identity. So God's place and identity is, I believe that I am a child of God. Just like Daniel, I believe that Jesus came to earth to give his life for me, and through his sacrifice and being raised from the dead, I have access to his spirit and I'm restored into relationship with him. And that is the first aspect of my identity, is that I am restored and in relationship with God. I am his child. The second aspect of identity is who he made me to be. So there are things about me, my personality, my interests, my dreams, are all actually things that he's given to me because that's how he's made me. God placed me in the family that I'm in so that they could shape me, in the community that I'm in so that they could shape me. And I was also genetically given things of my person, of who I was made to be. So Daniel, he was trustworthy, faithful and wise. Those are aspects of his personality. And these aspects of our personality or our traits or our interests, they're actually from God. God didn't design us by accident or place us in the communities that we're in by accident. We're there for a purpose. And he has identity and dreams that he wants to share, that he shares, interests that he shares with us. And then he also has gifts that he gives us. So on top of the original gift and sign of grace and favour, which was him giving his life for us, he then designs us intentionally and purposefully and beautifully. And then he has more gifts for us, just like God gave Daniel the gift of prophecy and wisdom, which is mentioned in chapter 1, which I've got the quote there. So he has further gifts for us. Not only has he given us that relationship and his place as our child, not only has he given us personal characteristics and attributes that he actually shares and designed intentionally for us, he then has further gifts for us to do the work that he has given for us to do. And God wants to partner with us to do that work, just like God partnered with Daniel to do his work. Daniel, with his origins as a slave, survived, don't know specifically how many, at least three kings' reigns. Three very foolish kings in many ways. And each time he was given the grace through his personality, through his identity in Jesus, and through his giftings to be an incredible ruler within that country and to remain seated in a position of authority. The other things that stood out to me is that walking in grace, it actually grows through trial. So sometimes you might think, okay, I have divine favor. Why isn't everything perfect? Because if things were perfect, then you wouldn't realize that you had divine grace. You wouldn't actually realize the gift that you had received. You wouldn't be able to appreciate the gift that you had received. So when you walk in grace and when you walk in God's favor, everyone notices. The enemy notices and the people around you notice. The enemy notices and tries to do everything in his power. I'm talking about the spiritual enemy here, because that is the true enemy of this world, not of the flesh, but of the spirit. The enemy will try to trip you up. The enemy will try to trick you, will try to make you doubt your position, doubt your authority, doubt your grace and what you're meant to do when you're partnering with God. But there's one incredible thing that Daniel does in this story, which I love. And when he goes through this trial, is he does what the scripture says, what he does day in and day out. He prays. It says he seeks God through prayer, and two components of his prayer, thanksgiving, and he asks for help. So Daniel is real. He's not like, my life is perfect. He says, thanks God for who you are and who you've made me to be, and then I need some help here. This is beyond my abilities to do. But it's the thanksgiving first. It's the acknowledgement of, actually, I know that there is grace for this. The other thing that I love about grace is that it's so attractive. So even though it's attractive it's offensive to the enemy, it's actually attractive to everyone else around you. So when you walk through grace, people notice. Which brings us to, grace is actually a weapon. It's a weapon that we can use. God's empowerment of us is a weapon that we can use to overflow and extend his victory. And then from there, use that as a testimony to continue to share and declare his victory. Grace isn't something that can be earned or worked at. The king does everything in his power to try and overrules the thing that he made because he appreciates Daniel and wants to rescue him. But he can't do anything because when we're working against things of the spirit, the one who is victorious is God. The one who is victorious is the king. So in that respect as well, grace is also supernatural. It's not something that we can strive to give or strive to earn. It's actually something that we just get to receive. And God's grace flows out from our receiving of his grace in our own spirit. We can't give away what we don't receive. So the whole point of the book of Daniel, it's in the Old Testament, but actually points to Jesus. This story of grace, this testimony of his faith, this testimony of his victory, and the testimony of the grace, empowerment, favour that God placed on Daniel's life points us to Jesus. Just like in the Bible Project video, all of those dreams are designed to bring us back to the one who is eventually going to rule this world. And that is a wonderful thing about grace. When we carry God's grace and his empowerment, we get to point people to Jesus. It's not about us. It's about Jesus. So a little bit about me. Most of you know me quite well, but just to kind of help bring in those concepts of identity and grace. I obviously like clothes. I'm also really interested in music, cheese and tea. I am most passionate about my family, creative expression and the supernatural. And I have a gift of prophecy and a love for people who don't yet know Jesus. So that's how I would like to describe myself if you were asking me to describe myself to someone who doesn't know me. And I'm telling you that because I believe that I have a grace for connecting with people who don't yet know Jesus. And that is because of my interests and because of the community that I'm in. When I went through uni, I had a friend who identified himself as a carny, as a carny, which is someone who is involved in circus troops. And he knew about my faith, and one day he turned to me and he said, "Why are you friends with me?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Christians aren't friends with carnies. Why are you friends with me?" And I was very confused about this. I was like, why aren't Christians friends with carnies? I didn't understand that that was like an evil. But I have a real interest in the supernatural. Some of my best friends are really into the New Age. Likewise, Brenton, my husband, tats, long blonde curly hair, his passion is music. So by day, he is a computer programmer. And then by night, he is a screamer in a metal band. I'm telling you, I like to describe it like that because Brenton in many ways is like Superman. But as Brenton, within the field that he works in or operates in, a lot of his friends are alcoholics. And I believe that we have a grace in that space to be the goodness and the love of God. And I'm telling you this because you have grace to walk in wherever you are because of who you are and who he's made you to be. Is there a time that I don't cry when I'm up here? So I want you to know yourself better today, know who God made you to be and who he is for you. So we're going to do a bit of an activation. And what we're going to do is we're going to pop some worship music on. And I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions. Thank you for listening. That's it. So what I'll get you to do is I'll just get you to assume a comfortable position. Get out pen, paper, phone, whatever it is that you like to do when you like to listen or journal with God. And we're going to have a chat with him today because you're not going to know yourself better without talking to your Father, because he has things that he wants to say about you that will actually communicate who you are better than you know or better than you could communicate. So we're going to listen to him. And we're going to ask him for his grace. So if you feel comfortable, close your eyes. You might like to sit somewhere else or just do whatever you need to do. I'm just going to pray and then we'll pop on the music. Dad, thank you that you constantly pursue your relationship with us. Thank you that you love us and have purposefully and intentionally made us who we are. Thank you for the community and the spaces that we are in. Thank you for the family that we have, both blood and church and everything in between. Thank you that you have good plans for us. Thank you that you have good gifts for us. And thank you that you have words to speak to us right now. Jesus, I just declare that you are speaking right now. And I just ask for your ears to hear your wisdom and a willing heart and hands to receive your grace. And I just say yes to whatever thing it is that you are wanting to partner with me to do, because I want to walk more in your grace and I don't want to walk anywhere or do anything that's not your work and without your grace. Thank you that you empower me. So the first question I want you to ask, if we could just go back to the PowerPoint. People don't need to see the video, it's just the words. So the first question is, how does God want to describe you today? What's your Father saying about you today? What does God love about you? What do you love about God? Is there an interest? Is there a personality trait? Or is there a dream that God is sharing with you right now? Your Father's heart beats with yours. What has He purposefully and intentionally given you? What is He reminding you of today? Is it a dream that you haven't thought about in a while? Is it a space that you really like to be in and move in? Is it a group of people that you really have a heart for? What grace does God have for you? What is His plan for you? Can be for today, can be for this week, can be for this year. How does God want you to receive His grace today? What does it look like to have the courage and the faith to overflow and to step into victory? What does it look like to say yes to Him, to relationship, and to partnering with Him? What are you going to do to show His love, His goodness, and His grace to the world around you? Dad, we receive Your grace now. We thank You so much. Thank You for Your faith in us and that we have the opportunity to partner with You. What a pleasure it is and what a delight it is. Thank You that we are powerful through You. We give You everything that we can. We want to show Your glory to those around You, around us. And thank You that the victory is Yours and has already been claimed and will be claimed again.